Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. You can listen to Mike live Sunday mornings from 9 to 11 Central on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Less than a minute now.
Tool time for 200.
This term for a long-handled gardening tool can also mean an immoral pleasure seeker. Ken.
What's a hoe?
No. Whoa. They teach you that in school in Utah, huh? Al.
What's a rake?
A rake is right. You select, Al.
400, please.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago, in between Angie's Deli and Lido Banquets, and just a punch key's throw away from the Polish capital of the Western Hemisphere. It's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast deep green gardening and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davy company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. If he talks about organic material, packaging, metamorphosis, systems, it's just his way of saying compost piles. Here he is, Mike Novak.
So are we all met here in studio? Do I see my whole crew here?
Yep.
Look at this. Sarah
Becca. Present accounted for.
Sarah Becca has returned.
Buenos dias.
Were you ducking Rick DeMaio? You didn't
no,
want to be part of that?
No, I wish I could have met him.
You will. We'll set that up. I'm going to make sure that that happens. It was really fun having Rick in the studio.
I bet.
Last week, wasn't it?
Oh, it was a blast.
It was a great time.
Yeah. And so Sarah Batka's back here, and Rob Carthol.
Hey.
Hey. And Lisa Albrecht.
Good morning.
And Denny Sheeter.
Hey now.
Who's...
Whoa.
Hey now.
Let's swing back to that one.
Hey now. Hey, Kingsley.
He knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Larry Sanders. Oh, you know, that's what I should have played at the top of the show. I should have played the Garden Weasel. I can throw that back in there at some point.
It's 10 o'clock hour maybe, huh?
Yeah. You know what? Maybe I will. Maybe I'll just throw into the Garden Weasel there. And you're not tweeting, I hear, from our town.
Yeah, it's getting a bumpy road right now, Mr. Novak. Bumpy.
Believe me, it is. When you start doing that stuff.
Yeah,
just...
something about hash browns or tags. I don't know. I'm still working on it.
I like the hash browns.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. We have an announcement to make right now.
Get that drum roll, buddy.
On the mic. Well, actually, I was going to do...
Oh, even better.
I only wish that I had actually recorded this. That would make it, I mean, performed it and recorded it. But next week, do we have to let this finish? Stop. Next week, it's getting annoying, on this very radio program, guess who's going to be here? And these people in the room don't even know that.
I know.
You don't know it
yet.
I'm
waiting.
Bated breath.
I'm excited.
Broadcasting legend. Bill Curtis.
Wow.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
No.
Yes.
The man.
The Bill Curtis.
Wow. I think Rick DeMaio is going to sneak back in here.
yeah. He's got a new program on WCPT. And actually, it's short. It's called Earth Matters, and it's environmental vignettes that Mr. Curtis will be doing. I think one a day.
I'm not sure how often they run, but I'll ask him next week. And they begin running on the, what's next week? The 10th, the 11th. They began running on the 11th right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk. And so I said to the powers that be, well, since he's muscling in on my territory, why don't I interview him on the show? And then we'll shake hands and be friends, and I won't have to stalk him.
It'd be a good professional relationship.
I think so. That's what we need to have, is a good professional relationship. So a week from today, just to start this very program right at this time period, we are going to have Bill Curtis, and it's very exciting. And I see he just retired again. You know, people keep retiring and unretiring and retiring. Me, I'm never going to retire. I'm going to be doing this forever.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. I had a moment there. Today's show is jam packed, as always. Gosh, you know Rob and I were talking before the show here about how much goes on in the world and how depressing it is sometimes, because you just want to cover it all, and there's no way you can cover it all, but you do your best. And you run out of the gate here, and you try to get stuff done, and then you move on to the next week and get some more stuff done, and that's what we're going to do today. In a second, Rob and Sarah, I want to, real quick, before we get to our first guest, I want you to talk about your experience on Friday evening at the opening of the
One Earth Film Festival.
The One Earth Film Festival. But in just a few minutes, we're going to have our Starved Rock update with Tracy Yang, who's the clean water organizer from the Sierra Club Illinois chapter. We continue to follow it. It still goes on. And I know that there are folks out LaSalle way and Ottawa way who are listening. There's going to be a hearing in Ottawa tomorrow, and we'll talk to you about that and why you should get out there and make some noise. And Margaret Martin Heaton, from Go Green Wilmette, and Lisa, you know these people because you spoke for the Go Green Wilmette folks. I saw it. I went to that speech that you did with Drew Solomon.
Yes, thank you again for attending that. Yeah, I'm excited to have Margaret here. We'll talk a lot about what they're doing to Green Wilmette and what other communities can do to follow their steps.
Rick DeMaio Weather, of course, not in studio today, but on the phone. And then in the second hour, I think it's going to get interesting. It's going to be fun. The Garden Professors, and they are Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott, and she's from Washington State University, Jeff Gilman from University of Minnesota, and they're just two of four that have this blog called The Garden Professors. They also have a Facebook page called The Garden Professors, and what they do is they create controversy in a way. What they do is they speak the truth. They debunk myths. They talk about the touchy-feely stuff and shove it out of the way for scientific reasons. I have talked to Dr. Chalker Scott on this program before. I've talked to her several times. Once when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial. And I think it's going to be fun, because I posted something on Facebook on a blog called Garden Chat. Actually, a Facebook page called Garden Chat, which is related to the Twitter Garden Chat. It's hashtag Garden Chat, about them being on. And suddenly it erupted into a controversy about compost tea and whether compost tea is viable. Very interesting stuff. And people have very passionate feelings about that. So we will talk with the Garden Professors to start the second hour. And then finally, Kathy McGlynn, who's with the National Invasive Species Awareness Week, and the Northeast. Oh, I'm not going to get this right. All right, where's my cheat sheet here? Doot, doot, doot. If I could scroll down, because I want to make sure I've got her title right. Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership. She's got something interesting to say about that, because March 3rd through 9th, so we're in it right now, starting today, is National Invasive Species Awareness Week. Here's the problem. It's a government program. Guess what happened on Friday?
Do we have to use that word?
Sequestration? That hurts, doesn't it? Just to say that? So they've canceled all the Department of the Interior-sponsored events for National Invasive Species Awareness Week. And, of course, the invasive species are also taking the time off because they're aware of the sequestration too. So they, no, they're not actually. You know, that stuff still goes on. We just don't have any money in our government because we won't get into it. We won't get into that. All right. Before we get to Linda, I'm sorry, Linda, Tracy Yang. Linda's later in the program. Tracy Yang, before we get to her from the Sierra Club, Rob and Sarah, tell me about the opening night. You guys went to the big gala.
It was a great, it was a really good vibe. There was a lot of people there, a big turnout. And it was, you know, it is a little bit disconcerting when you see, you know, these videos. Leo, who was on our show recently, Leia, who is
as in Princess Leia.
We saw her short film, which was kind of invigorating because, you know, it is challenging. We've got a lot of issues to face, but young people are out there getting active, making films and raising awareness about all the issues surrounding water and scarcity of water. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we got a good team on this. We're good.
You mean this team or in general?
The whole team. People gathering in Oak Park, having this conference.
Yeah.
There are people out there who care about the issues.
You met a very important person.
We did. We met Gerald Wilhelm of Swink and Wilhelm's Plants of the Chicago region, which is kind of one of my heroes.
It's a Bible, basically.
It's a Bible
of the region.
For any gardeners in the 22 counties surrounding the Chicago area. But he had a lot of very valuable things to say, not just about plants, but about water scarcity and resources, and a lot of very common practices that we're in, from eating hamburgers to maintaining our lawns, that really are things that we really got to think twice about.
Yeah, I learned that it takes 630 gallons of water to make a hamburger.
Does it really? Is it because of raising the beef and that sort of thing?
For your grain, 630. Cost of grain,
oh,
the cost
man.
Of water to, you know, wash the slaughterhouse floor.
That sounds like a tweet point that's going to go out any second. 630 gallons of water to make a hamburger.
75 liters to make a beer. To make one pint of beer.
But what is that in gallons? You're mixing them up now. So do we have to give up both beer and the hamburgers, huh? Wow.
Maybe we could just use the beer to make the hamburgers instead of the water.
Maybe that's where we should go. Well, anyway, if folks are interested, the final day of the One Earth Film Festival is today, March 3rd. And if you go to my website, mikenovak.net, and go to past shows, it's right there, just in the entry from February 24th. You can find the information there. If you're interested in going to see some important films, as Rob says,
they'll be screening Food Patriots this afternoon, so I'm going to head over there after the show. That's at noon at the United Methodist Church in Oak Park.
And you can go to greencommunityconnections.org if you want more information on that. Okay, it's time to follow up. Let's go to the phones, bring in Tracy Yang from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. Good morning, Tracy.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for being on the program. And actually, you should know Tracy reached out to me and said, you know what? It's time we talked about this again and let people know what's going on with Starved Rock. It's interesting, Tracy. I write on my website and in Facebook posts and tweets, Starved Rock Update. And that's really shorthand. You know, it's not about the state park and, you know, activities and stuff going on. It's now become code for all of us. Starved Rock means, oops, they're going to put a sand mine right outside, the frack sand mine right outside the eastern entrance of the park. So when you say Starved Rock Update, it means this issue, which you guys have been following. Now, the last time I talked to you, actually, I talked to Cindy Skrukrud, on the program in December, and that was when the three organizations, Sierra Club, Open Lands, and Prairie Rivers Network, had filed suit against the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, claiming that the agencies decision to approve phase one of the sand mine on behalf of Mississippi Sand LLC was arbitrary and capricious. I love those words, arbitrary and capricious. Now, I know that that's sort of standard legal jargon still. Those are great words. So where do we stand with that suit, Tracy?
Yeah, so it's interesting because I keep getting updates every day from our lawyers as to what's going on. So I got an update early this morning about it, and we have heard back from the DNR lawyers and from the Mississippi Sand lawyers. And basically, you know, we had a certain understanding of what the timeline was, but now things are discussions have been reopened between our lawyers and DNR's lawyers regarding the complaint. So the schedule for any of the responses and a timetable to add additional legal jargon and stuff to our complaint, that stuff has not been fixed yet. So right now, I know it's not much of an update, but right now it basically means that our lawyers are in discussions with DNR's lawyers to try to figure out what's going to be happening over the next several weeks. And I promise you, I'll keep you updated as soon as I hear more.
Well, I understand that. You can't know everything, especially when the lawyers are talking. Of course, the lawyers, they're in their own, they live in their own little bubble, and and they have to.
I don't speak lawyer very well, you know, so that's.
Neither
that's
do
what
I.
That's what I've got.
And in my other life, you know, one of the things I do is facilitate and videotape legal conferences, and most of the time it goes right over my head. it's important to know then, however, that the lawyers are discussing this and this complaint, we will hear more when we hear more.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good news, as we pointed out in December, and this was said by the CEO of Mississippi Sand. He said, well, this has the potential to drag this out for a year or longer. And of course, I'm on my end. I go, yay. and I'm sure a lot of people do feel that way. But we have other matters to discuss here, including a public hearing. In Ottawa, tomorrow, the City of Ottawa Planning Commission is holding a public hearing in the City Council chambers, and that's 301 West Madison Street at 7 p.m. And what's that all about, Tracy?
So basically, this public hearing is for the Archer Daniels Midland Company, and they are kind of a shipping company they own several pieces of land that are directly east of the Starved Rock Mine, and basically they are seeking a couple things from the Planning Commission. First of all, they're hoping that their parcels of land, there's three parcels there, they want it to be annexed into the City of Ottawa, and they're also asking that these parcels be given what's known as an R or rural zoning. And in this process, if they are able to get both of these things, the conditional use, there is a conditional use under the R zoning, or under the R zoning, in which they'll be able to use their facility for barge fleeting and shipping sand. So they'll be able to ship both agricultural products and the sand from the Mississippi Sand Mine and any other sand mine from these three parcels. So that's basically what they're seeking.
How does that affect what we're dealing with here? I assume that the sand then, you're saying the sand from the Mississippi LLC, Mississippi Sand LLC, would be able to go to this area and be shipped via that terminal?
Correct, yeah. And I think it's really important to note that the Mississippi Sand Mine, like the products from that mine, they're only going to need to use one of the three parcels that they're asking to get rezoned for the Mississippi Sand. So, this is kind of, if you kind of read between the lines, this could suggest that they're basically preparing to expand a lot of their facilities to be able to accommodate even more sand that's not just the Mississippi Sand.
Well, I think you sent me some information, and some of the folks in the area have sent me information about how the county continues to have more and more permits approved for sand mines. It just sounds like the whole county is going to be mined pretty soon. But the point you're making here is that, yes, if they're asking for this to be rezoned so they can ship the sand. And it's interesting, by the way, that Archer Daniels Midland is now involved in this. I mean, what would make it perfect if we could get Monsanto somehow involved in this, too? But the point being that this is moving forward. But it's yet another key point, a key part of this company, Mississippi Sand, being able to open this sand mine is they need to have some place where the sand can go, correct?
Correct, yeah. And I think that, the other option is that the sand would be trucked out. And there's some legal limitations. They cannot go west through Starved Rock State Park with any mining trucks or anything. That's one of the rules that they have to follow. So they have to go east. And really, when you go east, you have to go through the city of Ottawa or at this barge terminal facility. So, it's this really difficult decision of people deciding, do you want how the sand gets moved? And there have been some talks, I think, from what I heard this morning about I think Mississippi Sand has said if they can send the sand through the parcels at ADM, they'll limit the number of trucks that go through Ottawa, which sounds like a great deal. But when you really think about it, this is like a private agreement from Mississippi Sand. It's not that any sand mine company that's in the area will agree to those terms. Like there's no legal limitation to the number of trucks that are going through Ottawa from other sand mines. And I think that's a really important point that people need to consider when they're thinking about this.
Yeah, I think the idea that, hey, don't worry, everything's going to be fine, there will be fewer trucks if we do this, is an argument that you can hold with a grain of sand, so to speak. By the way, we're talking to Tracy Yang, who's from the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. We're doing an update on proposed sand mine just outside of Starved Rock State Park. If you missed it at the very beginning, the legal matter continues. The lawyers are talking to each other. Tomorrow is a council hearing to approve a facility on the river for Archer Daniels Midland. If you folks are interested, especially people who live in Ottawa, I would think, Tracy, right?
Yes, especially the people who live in Ottawa.
But I would imagine other people in the county will be heard, and if you're just interested, it's a public meeting, it's a public meeting, that brings us to other concerns. You sent me some information which I posted on my website, mikenovak.net. This week's show, health concerns. Dr. Crispin Pierce from the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire did some research, and what did he find?
A lot of interesting things. I don't know how familiar you are with the current science regarding what's known as non-occupational silica exposure. You hear a lot of times about occupational work health and safety limits, or known as like OSHA standards, where there are certain guidelines in place to protect workers who are on these front and center in terms of these mining operations and industry. Industry operations, but there's really up until Dr. Pierce's research, there was really nothing that had studied the non-occupational risks of silicosis and silica dust exposure.
And let me interrupt. When you say non-occupational, you mean average citizens who live nearby.
Yeah, basically. People who aren't in the field, who aren't directly working with whatever is happening, but are still affected because of their proximity. That would be an example of non-occupational. And, what he finds on his website, which I think I've seen that you've linked to on your site, there's a lot of different things that they've found. But I think kind of some of the big points that I've pulled out of here is, this is research that took place in Wisconsin, and the students that are working with Dr. Pierce have compared the Wisconsin DNR's kind of modeling program for predicting PM2.5 levels, which refers to particulate matter that has a diameter of 2.5 micron or less. Basically, they've kind of compared the levels that the DNR model, the Wisconsin DNR model, predicts with the ones that they had found over, I think, they did several grab samples, I think, during a sand mine being installed, I guess, or revving up, I guess, in a certain area. And they found that the modeling program was not very accurate in terms of how much the PM2.5 levels were. And the PM2.5 levels are, that's a significant number because it's at that size or less that's really known to contribute most to, you know, lung cancers such as silicosis and, you know, other human health hazards.
So you're saying here, and gosh, what a surprise, it might actually be more dangerous than we thought to live nearby one of these sand mines.
Definitely. And, you know, I think actually another point that was really big and from his website is that he's talking about how, you know, it's the fresh silica that has, you know, the stuff that has been just been mined and ground down has really been shown that it's way more, it's definitely more reactive with human tissues. So it is shown that freshly dug silica dust versus, you know, maybe something that's been aged a couple days and weeks, the fresh stuff definitely shows a higher instance of like lung inflammation in people who are exposed to it and things like that.
And you can find all that information on my website, MikeNovak.net. Go to this week's show and scroll down and you'll see health concerns and information about legislation, how the federal government is considering new legislation to update the 1968 laws for occupational exposure to silica dust. So they're way out of date. Before I let you go, the other thing I want to bring up that you pointed out to me was the 2013 Conservation Congress that's coming up in Illinois. And this is a chance for ordinary citizens to, speak to, the IDNR, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, and it allows them, the citizens, to become involved in the formal process to propose and advocate actions to protect and conserve natural resources. When are those coming up, Tracy?
So there's a lot of different dates for the Conservation Congress all around the state. There are some actually that are coming up in the Quad Cities on March 4th and 5th, so tomorrow and the day after, at Western Illinois campus from 7 to 9 p.m. There's also going to be some coming up in Chicago, and I think you have all of this.
Yeah, you know what? I'll save you the trouble here. March 12th, 13th, and 14th in Chicago at the South Shore Cultural Center from 7 to 9 p.m. And then in Belleville on March 21st and 22nd, Southwestern Illinois College, again from 7 to 9 p.m. And as you mentioned, Quad Cities, March 4th and 5th, that's tomorrow and Tuesday, Western Illinois campus from 7 to 9. And if you want information about that, you can write to Tracy at tracy.yang, Y-A-N-G. Tracy is T-R-A-C-Y, no E. So tracy.yang at sierraclub.org. And she'll send you information about that if you want to have a say. Tracy,
yeah.
And finally, we can also continue to write to Governor Quinn, who's been suspiciously silent about this whole thing. Maybe you don't think it's suspicious. I think it's suspicious, but at least we have the opportunity, and you think people should take the time to write to the governor, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I particularly want to re-stress the Conservation Congress and attending that because, you know, it's really an opportunity. I mean, DNR is actively seeking this public input. It is a really good opportunity for people to go there and, you know, stress with them that they feel that DNR is not doing what they're legally required to do in terms of examining the short and long-term impacts of mining that's occurring in the state. And it's a good opportunity to also, you would have a chance to speak, but you would also have a chance to leave written comments if you're not able to speak. So, I just really think that, this is a great opportunity for us to, you know, get this issue kind of really on the forefront here.
Okay, Tracy, thank you so much for contacting me. Thank you for being on the program. Thank you for following.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Well, and let's remind people again, in the area, in LaSalle County, if you live in Ottawa, you live in LaSalle, you live nearby, you live in Utica, you probably want to stop in at this meeting tomorrow night. The City of Ottawa Planning Commission, the public hearing in the City Council Chambers, 301 West Madison Street, 7 p.m. on the use of the ADM barge terminal for frac sand shipping. It's important that you make your voice be heard. And then later on, yes, do get involved in the 2013 Conservation Congress. And you have those opportunities. All that information is on my website. And Tracy, I hope we talk again very, very soon.
Yes, thank you so much.
All right, take care. Have a great Sunday.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees. In 2005, the Care of Trees commissioned Behavioral Science Technology, Inc., or BST, to evaluate the company's safety leadership practices. The Care of Trees was the first tree care company to participate in the BST Strategic Safety Leadership Program. Some of BST's other clients have included Daimler Chrysler, Johnson & Johnson, and the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Let's go with the best. Recent research by the University of South Dakota reveals that tree care workers have the highest accident rate of any municipal job. In fact, the most dangerous act you can do on the job is to remove a tree. Well, the Care of Trees motto is, "No one in our family gets hurt." I like that motto. That's the vision for their employee safety leadership program, and it's heavily promoted through all aspects of their operations. Invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Better gardening begins when you have the gardener's edge. Since 1885, A.M. Leonard has delivered high-quality tools for gardeners, growers, and landscapers. A.M. Leonard's Gardener's Edge has a huge selection of gardening tools, and right now, listeners to my show can save 30% on their popular soil knife, which has 58 out of 61 five-star reviews. Linda writes, "A must-have tool for every garden. I use it constantly, digging weeds, planting, sowing seeds, and cutting string for tying up plants. Garden Girl says, I have tough clay soil, and having gone through multiple trowels each season for several years, I decided it was time to look for something sturdy. This is it. I no longer even take my trowel to the garden. And right now, save 30% on the incredible soil knife from Gardener's Edge. Call 888-556-5676 during weekday business hours. 888-556-5676. And don't forget to mention me, Mike Novak, or go to GardenersEdge.com/Chicago. That's GardenersEdge.com/Chicago.
Who is that guy? Listen, before we move on, I just want to call attention to that because they're a new sponsor on the Mike Novak Show, A.M. Leonard, and the Gardener's Edge. And this really is a cool offer. And it's only available through the 17th of March, St. Paddy's Day, which is 2 weeks from today. And it's on my website. Go to MikeNovak.net. The home page. Scroll down a little bit and you will see the special offer. And it will take you to the page gardenersedge.com/Chicago. Or you can call them, call the number and just mention the Mike Novak Show. And what's cool about this is that this is what they call it, a soil knife. Some people call it a hori hori knife. It's or Japanese digging knife. And I love it. I've got one of these, so I don't have to order one now, but, they're really cool garden tools and they can replace a trowel. They can dig, they can cut. It's a great offer and I hope you take advantage of it, in the 2 weeks that we have it, up there. So again, if you want to call, but you have to do it during business hours, 888-556-5676 or go to gardenersedge.com/Chicago. You'll see a page with my name on it, and that's the place where you can order. And that's why we got up late on Sunday. It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Let's go to the phone line, and we will bring in Margaret Martin-Heaton with Go Green Wilmette. How are you doing this morning, Margaret? Oops, wait a second. My bad. There we go. Let's try that again. Good morning, Margaret.
Good morning.
Lisa, I'm going to let you kind of take
over. Margaret, good morning. Thanks so much for being on the air this morning.
Oh, I'm pleased to be here. Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, as Mike mentioned, I presented a few weeks ago at Go Green Wilmette, and I've been fortunate to have been involved for the last 7 years with some of the activities that you guys are doing. You have a big event coming up next weekend. What's happening on Sunday?
Oh, on Sunday the 10th of March, between 1 and 5, we're hosting Going Green Matters. It's our annual fair. It's a, I would describe it as a really fun afternoon of activities for food and information for families and for their friends to explore and discover ways that they can live a little more sustainably. We have activities for all ages.
That's great. And where will that be held?
It's at the Women's Club of Wilmette on Greenleaf Avenue in Wilmette from 1 to 5.
Okay, great. And I've been there, before. And what's just amazing is you guys are going to have, somewhere around 100 exhibitors. And I've been one since the very beginning with Solar Service, but I'm excited to have my own booth this year with the Climate Reality Project. Who are some of the folks that were going to be there this weekend?
Oh, gosh, out of the 100 or so you're mentioning, we've divided it into large groupings. So there'll be transportation exhibits and community resource exhibits, energy and environmental organizations, which I think is where you'll find yourself. And we also have food, lawn and garden care. So for example, the Connecting with Nature, we have the Heller Nature Center, the Peggy Notebert Museum. They are going to have great exhibits for us. Environmental organizations such as the Alliance for Great Lakes will be able to fill us in on all of their current procedures and activities. We have painting companies actually coming in to tell people about low VOC paints and actually no VOC paints, things I didn't know existed. Habitat for Humanity will tell people what to do with their old household items as they're rehabbing their houses.
Yeah, one of the things that I think is just great about the fair is whether you're eco-minded or just and have been doing this for a while, or whether you are just getting started, there's so many folks there that it's a great way to get yourself exposure to whatever you're interested. Whether it's like you mentioned low VOC paint, which I know a lot of folks don't understand that those are paints that are better for the environment. They have lower emissions in the house, so you don't have that paint smell, which is gaseous and bad for your health.
And they also have very good low VOC. I think a lot of people would say, well, of course, they're not as good as the old paints. We put a low VOC paint on our house. I don't know. We painted 5 or 7 years ago. It's holding up like a champ. It's just unbelievable. Now, you pay a little more for it. But I tell you, it was a quality paint, and it's done wonders for our house.
Yeah, I have them in the insides of my house, and I appreciated not having those smells for weeks and weeks. But I think what's great is if you're interested in food, if you're interested in water, if you're interested in electric vehicles, maybe you've got a teen who, you know, is a car buff and you want to get them and maybe expose them to other environmental things. There's a lot going on. But I think what's really exciting, in addition to the fair, is the work that Go Green Wilmette does within the community. And more importantly, you guys have started replicating yourselves into other communities. For example, Go Green Kenilworth, Go Green Park Ridge. Margaret, I'm not sure, you know, what your level of experience at Go Green is, but, you know, could you comment a little bit on, you know, how to bring this type of activity to your own town?
Well, it's been interesting, the process. What we did initially was invite all of these groups. We invited people through other communities who we thought had an interest. And Beth Drucker, who is our president, has been very active in that to encourage encourage groups to join us, whatever their level of activity. So that's one of the reasons we have a civic group and a local environmental group area, so that other members of the community can see what's possible and how they can get involved. And we do try to give them concrete ways to get involved. One of the easiest ways has been through recycling. I think that's something that's tangible and most people are on board with in their homes and everyday activities. They're far more aware of it now. That has been a really big draw for the public, I think.
I think you're probably right, because it seems like an easy place to start. I have trash in my house. What can I do to dispose of it responsibly? Mm-hmm. I think too, like if you are in a town or a community and you wish that they were doing more, I think heading out to the fair on Sunday is a really great place to start. Look at, you know, come out and see. Now it's taken you guys some time to get to the size and magnitude. But it's certainly something that can be replicated in your own community. You guys are also civically active as well, which is great.
Yes, this year our newest exhibit is called Talk It Up. It's conversations with local policymakers. We've invited as many policymakers as we can who will have an influence on Wilmette in particular and the larger region of the North Shore, North Chicago, to come and just, we're not going to put them on the spot in particular, but we do have a list of questions, and we're inviting every guest to the fair to contribute to these questions. We will group them, and then we can ask, broader questions of the policymakers. And I think it will be really instructive for visitors to find out what their thinking is on environmental issues that affect Wilmette.
Fantastic. Well, that's great. Well, Margaret, thanks so much, for the work. Everybody, head on down to Go Green Wilmette. Again, it's going to be at the Women's Center. And the address again, Margaret?
It's 930 Greenleaf Avenue in Wilmette, Illinois.
And your website?
It's www.goinggreenmatters.org.
goinggreenmatters.org.
And of course, that's on my website, mikenovak.net. If you go to this week's show, it's all there. Margaret, thank you so much for being on the program.
Well, thank you for hosting this. I really appreciate the opportunity to tell your listeners about our program.
And we're happy to hear it. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
And Rick DeMaio, weather coming right up.
Have you noticed that there's something going on in the food industry? It's becoming much less industrial. People all over Chicagoland, the U.S., and the world are rediscovering fresh, natural food. I'm Mike Novak, and I want you to join me at the Good Food Festival and Conference, March 14th through 16th at the UIC Forum in Chicago. There will be urban farm tours, workshops with experts in a range of fields, and exhibitors from across the country sharing the latest in sustainable food systems, public policy, and, of course, great food to enjoy. Please visit goodfoodfestivals.com to learn more about this outstanding event. You can purchase tickets online, get directions, and check out the workshop schedule and exhibitor list. Sustainable local food systems can transform our communities, our environment, and our economy. But it's up to us to get informed and get involved. I'll be speaking at the festival, and I hope to see you there. That's goodfoodfestivals.com.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Is pain keeping you from enjoying gardening? Dr. Bonnie Flaster at River North Wellness Center has gentle and effective techniques to get you out of pain and back to doing what you love. Here are two quick tips. First, remember to stretch. Second, use a timer to make sure you take breaks. Come see her at River North Wellness Center and find more tips at rivernorthwellness.com or call 312-642-7545 to make an appointment with Dr. Flaster and get back to feeling good.
Okay, I was trying to figure out how this had something to do with Rick DeMille, and then the line "and a bottle of wine" came up, and so there we go. Rick DeMille, how are you this morning?
Good, Mike, but due to sequester, my show ends today at 9:57.
I should have known you were going to do something political here.
Yeah, no, nothing more than a 48-hour forecast.
That's right, and then you're done. I tell you, right, exactly. Or I can give a forecast for only half of the wards in Chicago.
That's right. Yeah, anything north of anything north of Roosevelt Avenue. That's it.
That's it. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, then.
But you know what? I don't know. I'm not so bad with it. Ever cut up a credit card in your life because you were spending too much?
I've cut them up for other reasons because I didn't like the rates.
Right. Well, yeah, that's part of it. So I think all we did here is we just cut up a credit card. It's no big deal.
Yeah.
I'm much more, I think, I guess, pragmatic about it. I'm like, you know what? If this is what we got to do. Let's just do it. I'm serious. I really am.
You know, and what I think might happen is that we're going to get used to this.
Yeah,
and then we're all, except for the people who are getting furloughed and have to work 4 days instead of five, and so they're getting 20% less
I've
pay.
Been there before, I think we all have, and I think it's always in the end, it probably makes you a better person. You don't rely on something else to get you by. And
But here's the problem. When it starts to take its toll,
I know there's problems associated with this.
Yeah, when it starts to take its toll on the economy, and then right. we were just about to hit a new record in the Dow. And you know what? I'll tell you what. My philosophy on the Dow is it always goes up when there's bad news for the average citizen. You know, when there's bad economic news for the working stiff, that's when the Dow shoots up.
Right, and it's not really the best barometer of what's really happening with the economy. A lot of it is probably false expectations and a little bit of diluted optimism as well.
You know, and you tell me, and we'll get to weather eventually.
Yeah.
But you're telling me that we can't figure out a way to get some who runs their household without revenue? It's like, you know what? I'm going to quit my job, and then I'm just going to cut back on food and heat and electricity until I can afford to live. Well, that's not going to happen if you quit your job because there's no revenue coming in. You're telling me that we can't go to Congress and somebody and they can't say, you know, let's charge a quarter of a percent or a quarter of a cent on all transactions on Wall Street so that we have some money coming in. Why not? You know, this has been suggested before.
Oh, yeah.
And it would provide revenue, and it's not, you know, a tax in the traditional sense of a tax. Where, you
right.
know, and
right.
it, and it would make total sense. That's the problem. It makes too much sense.
Yeah, or not enough sense, I guess, is one way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But yeah, God forbid there's any regulation on Wall Street. Can't do that. But
no.
Look at what the mess it got us back in, 2008 when there wasn't enough. And don't get us all started on that.
Yeah, I know. You're the one who started this, Rick.
Yeah, I know. Well, but no, you started it at 9:01 when you started your show.
That's true. Hey, we
opened up the floodgates. Hey, doesn't this Sunday remind you a lot of last Sunday?
How? Yes, because there's another storm coming on Tuesday.
Right. It's been a very been a very, very regular pattern. We've had, you know, sunshine, warmth, snow, sunshine, warmth, snow. But clearly when you get a little bit more snow, a little bit tougher to get, you know, the warmth, even though you have sunshine. But Mike, I know I sent you a picture of the ice on the lakefront the other day. I have never seen this much ice on Lake Michigan in about 4 years. And it just goes to show you how, you know, weather sometimes can kind of twist things around a little bit. And here we ended up with, you know, 16 inches of snow for the month, 20 so far for the season. We have probably another, you know, at least maybe 3 to 4 coming at us. Still a lot of questions, though, with this next storm system. But the best thing about it is, you know, you look at not so much how much snow came down, which was a lot in some areas to the north, but the amount of water that came down within this system. I love these late-season snows because they're very wet, they're very slow-moving. The ground is really doing a nice job of allowing this moisture to percolate, I should say precipitation to percolate down into the groundwater.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you look at the numbers and we're, you know, 8.3 inches so far from December 1st to the end of February, which is, you know, almost 3 inches above average. And even though, you know, the month of February was cold, I tell people this is really great news for the farmers, for growers, for tree lovers, for people who planted anything last year. And the next one coming at us is going to be almost the same thing, and it's looking good. Everything is looking really nice from a weather standpoint heading into the month of March.
It is amazing how things turn around, and as you point out, there's ice on the lake. That's good for a number of reasons. One is that it reflects the sun's rays back mm-hmm. up. Now it's not the whole lake isn't covered, obviously.
Right.
But any area that you have like that is a good thing. However, what you have to put up with now is those people come. Oh, what happened to global warming?
Right. Yeah. Then you know what? That's fine. I'm fine with that. But
I've seen you dismantle people, so you've got no problem.
But the amazing thing about it is the lake has probably about as much ice along the Lake Michigan shoreline as it's had all year. And it could easily be gone in another week, but this is probably going to, I mean, I'm predicting right now, this is probably going to lead to below average temperatures most likely for the rest of the month of March, particularly along the lakefront, because once you get that ice covered up in the lake, particularly along the shoreline, it doesn't go away anytime soon. At least the water temperatures don't warm up much. So just from a short-term standpoint, probably the next month seems to be cooler. So I always like, you know, to talk about how the next month is going to turn out. During the first month of the first weekend of the month. So here we are, March 3rd. Average temperature this time of year is right around 41 degrees. What's nice about it is by the time you get to the end of the month, you know, you're looking at low 50s and already people are thinking of, you know, planting in the ground. But this is going to be a much, much different March compared to last year. And the overall pattern just seems to want to stay very, very active between now and probably the next at least 2 to 3 weeks. With the exception of, you know, maybe some rain coming back at us over the next week as opposed to snow. But the system that's going to be driving down southwest from the Rocky Mountains over the next couple of days, still a lot of question marks with this compared to where the snow is going to set up, where the rain snow line is going to set up, and how much cold air is behind it. But without a doubt, the bottom line is from a precipitation standpoint, this is looking really, really good. And, you know, getting back to, you know, sequester a little bit, a lot of people, I think, probably tend to forget that, you know, the National Weather Service is basically an arm, you know, an extension of the federal government. NOAA is all basically, you know, federal government workers. And there's a lot of people, even in the National Weather Service, who are probably going to be affected by sequester from a standpoint of whether or not there's certain grants given out, whether or not there's certain research projects that are ongoing in some of the local National Weather Service offices. One thing I've learned when you go to some of these conferences, you ask people, you go, now, do you work for the Weather Service or do you work for NOAA? They go, no, I work for NOAA, which is different from the Weather Service because the Weather Service has one budget. But when you work for NOAA, which is kind of the umbrella group, usually these are the people that basically live their life, Mike, and it's kind of scary. They live their life like almost every 6 months, and it's all about getting grants. And then when you get the grant and then you produce the research, you got to publish it. You got to make sure your results are going to be somewhat kind of on the leading edge of what people will need to read. So they go, okay, you did really well. We'll give you another grant. And I've seen people, you know, kind of talk to go, well, my grant money is running out and I don't know what to do, which is almost like how freelancers live. And you and I have both been in that situation, and it's not very comfortable, is it?
I am in that situation.
Yeah, I know you are.
And I know you are too, actually.
But those people who do live a freelance life, I don't think they probably realize that there's a lot of people, even with masters and PhDs, who basically live, you know, research project to research project, grant to grant, and sequester. We'll probably hurt that. And that definitely is a shame. I'm not trying to, you know, water down the ultimate effects of it, but it will have a problem, you know, across the industry, you know, with the National Weather Service, obviously, in the research community as well.
Yeah, well, and if we're not getting our weather forecasts, if we're cutting back, and what happens with storms like Sandy that are out there, and we need those people, what, do they just fill out the overtime, or there isn't going to be any overtime?
Well, I think from a local situation, you're fine, but it's the long-term research. You know, people who work at the University of Wisconsin on satellite systems 5 to 7 years down the road, that's, I think, where it's going to be a problem. You're not going to not get forecasts, you know, as you wake up in the morning. That's not going to be the problem, but it definitely long-term, it could have an impact on it, and most likely will. And I would love to get in touch with some of the friends I know who may be affected by it, and you know, maybe we can talk about it next week as well from a standpoint of how this may be impacting them.
Yeah, I have a feeling it'll still be going on. So let's do that. All right, give us that forecast very quickly.
Yeah, sure. A lot of sunshine today. Obviously, temperature is only in the low 30s. Made it down into the single digits overnight. That's what clear skies, light winds, and snow will give you. And then it looks like a quiet day tomorrow with snow developing late tomorrow night into Tuesday. It could be one of these things where there's more snow to the south as opposed to north. So I suggest everybody, you know, listen to your local forecast, listen to the radio and the TV, especially probably Monday night into Tuesday. We'll get a better chance on this. And then, Mike, when we're talking next week, we'll be talking about temperatures maybe close to 50 degrees and a lot of slush underfoot.
Oh, boy. Well, you know, as long as there's snow on the ground and it's still percolating down there, nice and easy. I like that.
Oh, yeah. This is good all the way around for the growing season.
Yeah. Yeah, it does look like even Tom Skilling said that the other day. He says this bodes well for the growing season so far. All right.
Well, I feel much better about myself.
I didn't mean to throw that name out there. We're going to sequester Tom Skilling. All right. All right. I will talk to you later, Rick.
Enjoy the week as well. Take care, Mike.
All right. Bye-bye. And everybody else. And bye, Rob. And bye, Sarah. They're all here. That's Rick DeMaio. And he's here every Sunday at this time. In the second hour, the garden professors are going to be here. So get your gardening questions ready. 763-9278. They can be controversial, and they might just be really sweet. And, of course, we'll talk to somebody who has been affected by the sequestration all on the Mike Novak Show.
Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees. And by Recycled Granite, featuring eco-friendly split stone veneers and handmade products by individuals with disabilities. Go to recycledgranite.com. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
And you know why I played this? Just to make Sarah Batka happy.
Thank you.
Since she's back in the studio.
I was playing air.
Air. Whatever that instrument is.
Yeah, I think
what is that instrument that they put
air
in there?
Air triangle, I think she was playing. Was that air triangle you were playing?
It's the one that goes the...
Oh, she was, well, she was, what is that little percussion instrument?
Dang. We don't know, but I need one. But I must have it.
You need one in the studio.
Yes.
I think that's...
Because the air version of that was pretty tricky.
Why not?
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. I've lost track of that. The phone. Where's the phone thing? Here. Why does it? Does it just shut down sometimes? Sometimes I wonder what's going on. Okay, I can open it again. We have the technology here. I can find the thing. Boom! Because I know that. Denny is, we got calls coming in all of a sudden.
It's getting a little crazy over here in the phone screener booth, boys.
Okay.
And gals.
I'll tell you what. Let us, we're going to take a phone call here. I just want, by the way, before we do that, and we're, the garden professors are coming up in just a second. And, it's interesting because, you always wonder with the Flower and Garden Show coming up next week, which, and it starts next Saturday, whether the warmer weather is good for the flower show or it's bad for the flower show. I always like to think that when it's snowy and cold, people want to go indoors and look at these plants. But I'm going to be there. Jennifer Brennan and I, representing Dig In Chicago, our television show now entering its second season. And we'll have information about that. I'm going to have her on the show next week, too, to talk about that. But we're going to be at the Flower and Garden Show at Navy Pier. So I hope you come down there and visit us when we are there. And I hope a lot of people show up. That would be a really good thing. And one other thing that I found out just about yesterday, and I didn't know about this. Rob, maybe you did. Sarah, I don't know if you knew about this. The Midwest Urban Farmers Summit.
Yeah, coming up next weekend.
I didn't know about that.
There's so much going on.
I know.
That's going to be at the plant, right?
Yeah, it's at March 9th, 10th at the plant. The summit will provide a meeting place for urban farmers to gather and discuss challenges and rewards of growing and producing food in Chicago and elsewhere in the region. It will be especially useful. Yes, it will be getting the thumbs up from Denny. I have no idea why. It's thumbs up about something.
Well, the show's going great, and we got callers on the way.
Well, thank you for the critique. I appreciate that. Next time, just put it in writing and send it to the management, okay? Back to the Midwest Urban Farmers Summit. It's going to be useful for production-based farmers who are trying to develop efficient, sustainable, and profitable urban systems. It will include breakout sessions proposed and directed by farmers, workshops and lectures, and opportunities for information sharing and networking with like-minded growers. And, of course, it's at The Plant on the south side of Chicago. And if you're not familiar with The Plant, you should be. I've talked about it on the show many times. It is an old meatpacking plant that is being transformed right now to show what sustainable food production and economic development look like. They have aquaponics in there. They're going to be small craft food businesses. At the moment, they're constructing an anaerobic digester, and the goal of the plant is not just to be carbon neutral, but carbon negative, so that they're actually creating more energy than taking care of carbon output more than they are creating it. So it's a wonderful thing. And of course, that Midwest Urban Farmer Summit is next week, March 9th, 10th. And if you want to find out more, go to MidwestUrbanFarmers.org. Midwest, it's all one word, MidwestUrbanFarmers.org. And I just found out about that yesterday. Go figure. Let us immediately go to the phones. And Bill, you hang on there because I am going to get to you. I'm sorry, I meant Mike. I was looking at the phone line there. Yeah. It's hard to read. But let's go to line two and bring in Dr. Linda Chalker Scott from Washington State University. Linda, how are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you?
Okay. What's it like in Washington on this fine Sunday morning?
It's actually sunny.
Really?
And cool. Yes, it's going to be a great day to be outside.
Take a picture. Yeah, that didn't happen very often out there.
Not this time of year.
No. On the other line, I have Jeff Gilman from the University of Minnesota. Jeff, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great. I'm very happy to have you on the show. I've not had that pleasure yet. Dr. Chalker Scott has been on the program a couple of times, once when I was at another radio station, who shall remain nameless, and even here. Jeff, you've been on my radar for several years about a number of books that you've written, such as The Truth About Garden Remedies, What Works, Why, What Doesn't, and Why, How the Government Got In Your Backyard, Decoding Gardening Advice, and on and on. It's great to have you here. And the two of you are one half of something called the Garden Professors.
That's right.
I'll let you, Jeff, explain. How did the Garden Professors come about?
A few years ago, almost 4 years ago now, Linda and I got together with Holly Scoggins at Virginia Tech and Bert Craig at Michigan State, and we decided that we wanted to put together a blog just kind of talking about what professors who work with plants do kind of on a day-to-day basis and what we think about. So we put together that blog. It's at www.gardenprofessors.com. And since that time, we've put together a Facebook page, and we're actually working on a few other things, too. So it's just a group of professors that are, you know, actually interested in talking to people.
Well, not just talking to people.
hopefully educating them a little bit and receiving some education in return.
Yeah, and that's the point, is you folks are interested very much in science. As a matter of fact, when I talked to Dr. Linda Chalker Scott, she is the one who always
blinded me with science.
And she does. You guys are in a little bit, I would say, a little bit notorious for being very straightforward and you know, I'll give an example. Just the other day, I mentioned on a Facebook site, it's a site for gardeners, and I said Garden Professors were going to be on my radio show, and then suddenly this conversation about compost tea erupted, and the fur was flying. And I've read some stuff that you've said, actually, Jeff, about Linda and compost tea. That really is kind of it gets your goat, doesn't it, Linda? Compost tea claims.
It does, because it's just one of those things. It won't go away. You know, it's probably the thing that I get more questions on by email than anything else. And Jeff and I are, you know, continue to fight the good fight for science. And frankly, if and when there's good science on it, Jeff and I will be the first ones to be promoting it. But right now, it's just not there.
Well, let's go into that just a little bit, okay? Compost tea is a controversial subject. If you had asked me 4 or 5 years ago, was this a good thing? I might have said yes. I might have said, sure. You know, knock yourself out. And I have become more critical, and not just because of you, Linda, but I've gone to conferences where people have talked about compost tea. And I should explain that compost tea is basically taking compost and accelerants like sugars and that sort of thing, and you put the compost in distilled water. The idea is that you have water that is distilled or has had the chlorine gassed off or that sort of thing. And the reason you're doing that, and it's a cold process, and it's an aerobic process where you get a bubbler and you put it in there, and then you bubble the stuff for 12 hours or 24 hours or 36 hours, depending on what you're trying to create. And the theory is that it increases the microbial activity tenfold or 20-fold or however much. And then when you apply that to your garden, you're not giving the garden nutrients, you're giving your garden biology. All right. Linda, what's wrong with that?
Well, There's a lot wrong with it, actually. In the position that I've found myself in, I get a lot of manuscripts to review that then get published in the peer-reviewed literature. And what's interesting is that, especially the last few I've received, they've looked at the biology of the compost they're using as the feedstock for the compost tea, and they're comparing what's in it to what actually comes up in the compost tea in terms of nutrients and microbes and nematodes and everything else. And it's orders of magnitude greater in the compost. So what you're actually doing when you're making compost tea is diluting the power of the biology in the compost into this kind of watery supplement. And as Jeff and I have continuously said, use compost. Compost is great stuff. I've started calling it slow food because it slowly leaches nutrients and water through the system. There's microbes there. They have something to eat, and you have to realize that if you're spraying compost tea onto bare soil, what are those microbes going to eat? I mean, it's taking what's a completely natural and sustainable process, which is compost feeding the soil, and turning it into something that really isn't sustainable. And I do have to point out, is really resource wasting. And you've got to have aeration going on continuously. You've got all these supplements you're putting in. Some of them are like bat guano and kelp meal are not harvested sustainably. I mean, there's a lot wrong with the picture.
It's interesting because just a couple of years ago, I went to a conference where some arborists from a reputable tree company talked about compost tea and said, we've been looking at this and checking the numbers, and right now we're not seeing the numbers. That compost, straight compost, as you pointed out, Linda, is actually the best thing to do. It's just put compost down, and then you don't have to fool with all this other stuff. And they were saying they were trying to figure out if the compost tea formulas worked, but their tests showed that they didn't see an appreciable benefit from the use of compost tea. And, there's a lot of my friends in the business who swear by compost tea, and there's people I know who use it and swear by it. And they're... I guess what you've been saying is, okay, show me the numbers. Where are the numbers?
Exactly.
So why don't we have numbers? That would be my next question. Why don't we have more studies? Why has there not been a definitive study on compost tea?
Well, let's let Jeff answer this one. Let's go back and forth.
It's let's put Jeff on the hook here. Yeah,
I'd be happy to. There are no numbers on it. There is no definitive study because there will never be a definitive study. There are simply too many ways to make the compost tea for the proponents of compost tea to ever give up. I mean, there really are. I have a friend who did do a study on compost tea out of Wisconsin, and she was told simply that she had made the compost tea incorrectly, despite the fact that she followed every single criteria that was given to her. She either had the wrong compost, or she was bubbling it wrong, or she didn't add enough of one nutrient or another. So there are just so many arguments to make. The thing is, when we actually do have published studies of compost tea applied out in the field, you just don't see the results. I mean, you don't even really usually see modest results. You usually see absolutely nothing. I want to back up what Linda said before about the problems, but let me tell you the big problem. It's actually easy to imagine when you look at it this way. Let's take your whole viewing audience. Thousands of people, or actually, viewing audience, I'm sorry, listening audience.
Yeah, we'll call them what we want to call them.
All right, we'll call it thousands. Hundreds of thousands.
Yes.
Why not?
Yeah, please,
say,
please.
Let's say we've got a few hundred thousand people, and we drop them right into the middle of the Sahara Desert. Are they going to build a new civilization? No, they're going to be dead. Okay, I mean, it's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. They're going to be dead because there's nothing there for them. If you take microbes from compost tea, and hey, compost tea is going to make something or other. I don't think everything it makes is good, but it's going to breed something or other. If you throw those out into the middle of a place where they can't live, they're not going to live. They're going to die. End of story. I mean, it's actually very simple to break down why compost tea isn't likely to be effective in most situations.
because they have to have some place where they can thrive.
Exactly.
Is what you're saying. And
exactly.
And I have to admit that when I hear the argument and people say, as you just did, Linda, which is use compost. That's the stuff. That's where the biology is. That's where the structure is. That's where the tilth is. I think, I can't really argue with that. So, all right, that is this is how we start with Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott and Jeff. Do you have a – oh, by the way, I have to ask you two. You're both associate professors. You're colleagues at the Garden Professors, Dr. Holly Scoggins and Dr. Bert Craig are also associate professors. When do I get a real professor?
Subject. Holly's going up for full professor this year, I believe. So hopefully, very soon.
I didn't mean to bust you there. I just thought it was kind of funny. It's like you guys obviously know a lot of stuff that you'd think that you'd get a promotion at some point. You know.
Well, you know, I will actually address that because I've decided that I just am not going to bother going up. The way things have evolved at my particular university is it is now required, when you go up for full professor, to have significant outside grant funding, which brings in overhead dollars. What Jeff and I and the rest of us do doesn't generate big grants because we don't do things that have to do with food and fiber, and that's what the USDA funds. So I can't generate the types of money that I need to go up for full professor. So I will be stuck at associate.
So when you say you don't do the things that generate that kind of revenue, what are the things you do? How would you explain it?
Well, I do extension outreach. I mean, I'm 100% extension. I still do research. You know, I generate small funds for doing small projects. I support graduate students, but I don't have multi-million-dollar grants because that's not the type of stuff that I do. The urban horticulture, arboriculture, things that have to do with real-life gardens and landscapes, that's not of interest to big funding organizations.
All right.
That's just the way it is.
I've got a point to make about that in a second, but I tell you what, since you did say you're an extension, you're an outreach person, we've got a call on the line. Do you guys mind answering a question from one of my listeners?
Not at all.
Okay. I figure if you guys can't answer it, we're done. We're doomed. Okay. So let's go to line one and bring in Mike in Waukegan. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi, Mike. How you doing?
All right.
How's everybody doing there?
We're having fun so far.
Hey, great. Well, my question is kind of maybe off the wall a little bit, but I live on a slight hill, and I got an old leaky basement. The foundation's bad, and I've got a large tree in the backyard. It's at least 2 feet in diameter. And
do you happen to know what kind of tree it is?
I'm not sure. I think it might be a locust, but I really don't know. The branches break off pretty easily, if that tells you anything. And if there are any wind of any kind, there's usually small branches and sometimes larger ones, you know. But what I need to do is, if I want to minimize the flooding, I go in the backyard with a wheelbarrow and a snow shovel, and I shovel the backyard and just transfer the snow to the front yard. And I'm wondering if that will harm the tree. Now, the tree is near the fence, about maybe a couple yards from the fence, and the roots that go under the fence into the other yard will get the moisture, full moisture of the snow there. But I clear off what I got or have been, and I'm kind of concerned about whether or not that will, not allow the tree to get the moisture that it needs in the winter, you know.
A tree that's 2 feet in diameter is not going to have any problem spreading its roots, or it already has its roots spread far enough that all the shoveling you can do is not gonna hurt that.
It won't, huh?
No.
Oh.
I mean,
good.
You're just moving snow, right?
Right.
Yeah, just moving snow like that is not going to be a big deal. The tree will handle it no problem.
You know what I'm thinking, Jeff, is that he's moving snow probably to where the tree roots extend anyway.
It's entirely possible.
Well, it'd be in the front yard. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but do you know how far?
Also, that so I don't think they could reach out that far. But
yeah, the house would probably block the roots.
Yeah,
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. Other than that, they could probably reach that far if you have a large enough tree. But Linda, would you care to comment?
No, I agree with Jeff. A tree that's that old and established is not going to have any problem getting moisture. The only thing that I would worry about, and not knowing what kind of tree, it's kind of hard to tell, but is that snow does also act as an insulative barrier. So if it gets really, really cold and you don't have the snow on top of the soil there, you're going to get some freezing of fine roots that happen to be up at the surface. Probably never hurt the tree that much, but that would be the only other thing that snow layer would provide.
So even on a year like last year when it was really dry, it's only missing maybe like one or just a few rainfalls, I suppose, of the equivalent thereof as far as the snow. Would that be the way to sort of gauge that? Or
I think that it's actually barely missing a rainfall at all. The thing is, once again, those roots are going to extend so far that I don't even think it's going to be missing a rainfall. I really don't.
Like I said, it's getting all the snow in the other yard anyway. So those roots, that would go under the fence to the west.
Right.
Yeah. So it should be okay then, huh? Just maybe keep an eye on it, see if it looks like it's still healthy.
Yeah, I think you're going to be fine, Mike. I don't think there's a problem with that. Now, if you had it was a tough year. The last couple of years have been tough, and especially if you had a tree you had just planted, you got to pay more attention to that because it hasn't sent out its roots yet. And as Jeff mentioned, this tree is established and it's kind of capable of taking care of itself. Not that you shouldn't ever neglect it totally. It's probably not going to hurt to mulch it. But other than that, I think you're probably fine.
Yeah, I got one tree planted in the backyard, and I leave snow around it, that covers the well, within its root ball there. So,
yeah. All right, well, there you go.
Much. I appreciate it.
All right, you have a good day, Mike.
You too now.
Bye-bye. 773-763-9278 is our telephone number. We are talking to the garden professors, at least one half of the garden professors, Jeff Gilman from the University of Minnesota and Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott. From Washington State University. I'm looking at the line here. I'm looking at the questions coming in. This is the perfect question for you, for the two of you. And let's immediately go to, is it JR? JR, you're on the Mike Novak Show. What have you got on your mind?
Good morning, Mike. My question would be, when talking about composts and organics and food scraps, all the different organics that are what they're feeling on biosolids would be.
Hey, I think biosolids are great.
Thank you.
There are a lot of people who don't like the idea of biosolids because we are talking about human waste. Let's be honest. We're talking about human waste. But there are thresholds of heavy metals, et cetera, that biosolids have to meet before they're used. Now, I'll admit I'm not the biggest proponent of using them on edibles. I think they can be, but I personally don't, but I will use them on my lawn. I do use them on my lawn. I do use them on my non-edible crops, and I think they work great. And honestly, what a waste not to use them. So that's my feeling.
And I agree with Jeff, too.
My feeling is I have researched this and talked to some of your colleagues. I can't remember who it was. Several years ago, I talked to one of the professors at, I believe, University of Washington about biosolids. And over the course of my conversations, JR, I became convinced that, as Jeff says, it's a waste of resources. And not only that, if we don't figure out how to deal with biosolids, What are we going to do with them? We used to dump them in the ocean. We're going to throw them in the rivers. We're going to pile them up in landfills. We have to treat those substances. But I think that's part of the future. Part of the future of this planet is figuring out how to deal with all the waste we're creating because last time I looked, the population of the world was only going up. And it's, where do they say it's going to peak? At 9 billion or something like that in the middle of the century? Or at the end of the century, I don't know exactly what the numbers are. But I think we have to address that. But as Jeff pointed out, those are issues, the issues of heavy metals.
What do you say, Jeff, about pharmaceuticals? That seems to be part of that issue that has not been resolved.
Yeah, and I understand the pharmaceutical issue, particularly antibiotics. I would say that it looks like the antibiotic concentration is pretty low at this point, but that is the one thing that I do find somewhat concerning, because it may create a situation where you might get a resistant bug in certain in a certain situation. I don't think it is quite the major concern that some people are making it out to be, but I think that we need to acknowledge that it is an issue. And if we ever see evidence of it having any kind of an effect, then I think that we need to take steps to try and remove pharmaceuticals from the waste before it's used. But again, at this point, I'm conscious of it, but not that concerned about it.
All right, JR, does that help?
Yeah, it's like you say, it's just something that's frustrating that people don't understand it or understand the work that's been done into it. I mean, we do a lot of work with the Metropolitan Water Reclamation, probably one of the largest facilities in the country, if not the world, testing it, treating it, doing certain things here in Chicago. And I guess one of the, you know, the famous one, at least here with organics and soil products, being, you know, I've been doing it for 30 years, to have one of my trucks pass a truck of biosolids on I-55 going 50 miles one way and I'm going 50 miles the other way. And, to use it where you lose it. It's just it's just a learning curve. People are so afraid of it.
Yeah, and that's a good way of putting it, JR. I agree. It's a learning curve. People are afraid of it. We need, again, as you guys mentioned before, to get the science behind it to make sure that we understand that we're not poisoning ourselves. But at this point, Jeff, I happen to agree with you that I think we need to go down this road. JR, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Have a great Sunday.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye. Lisa Albrecht in studio here. Did you want to jump into the conversation?
I just had a novice question of why is human waste thought of any differently than manure? I mean, if manure is considered to be a source for nutrients, why is it any different? And then that also raised the question to me for the about pharmaceuticals. Well, we're definitely using pharmaceuticals within livestock, so is that a concern there too?
It can be. It can be, but generally, again, the concentrations are so low. And with humans, with cattle, we're generally not using the most advanced antibiotics, whereas with humans, we are using the most advanced antibiotics. So the theory is that by putting those more advanced antibiotics out in the field, we could breed microbes which would be resistant to them and cause disease. And again, I don't see that as a major problem, but it is one that we have to be conscious of. Additionally, what you'll find in human waste is, for example, antidepressants and various other drugs that humans ingest regularly. And once again, I don't believe that they're major problems, but it is something for us to be conscious of. Trying to think, the other thing that you'll sometimes see in human waste is greater amounts of heavy metals because of our diets. We eat a lot of fish, and you can get a little bit more mercury. It doesn't. Again, not usually a problem, but we have to acknowledge that it sometimes may be an issue in certain specific instances.
And you know, this is the third rail of the compost issue. When you talk biosolids, and there are, I've had folks say to me, "No way, no how, ever." And I think, well, what are you going to do with it?
And you think it's just more a perception thing of just yuck?
It is. It's the ick factor. And so what I've been trying to do is because we have, a couple of producers of biosolids in Washington State, and I try to get people to kind of get past the ick factor and say, okay, you won't want it near your vegetable garden, that's fine. Why don't you put it around your landscape plants? You know, try it there, cover it up with compost or wood chips or whatever so you don't even have to look at it, and just try it that way.
Those are the garden professors, Jeff Gilman and Linda Chalker Scott. Hang on, you guys. I'm going to keep you on here for just a little bit longer. Our phone number is 773-763-9278. They're answering questions about gardening. We've gotten controversial already. We had the compost tea thing. We got the biosolids. What have we missed that people are going to get all upset about? Why don't you guys think about that for a couple of minutes here? I'll be back with you. Here's a testimonial from a client of the Care of Trees. Arlene B. writes, "Thanks for sending Evan and Matt as the crew for work at my property. They were extremely pleasant to work with. Evan demonstrated understanding of the importance of tree and forest conservation and runoff as it affects the environment. Matt offered very helpful information on issues related to tree and shrub health and carefully explained the cable installation that he performed. In short, they interacted well, and they didn't butcher my arborvitae while pruning it back from the gutters." That's the best part. "And they didn't butcher my arborvitae while pruning it back from the gutters." Hey, not the Care of Trees, maybe other tree companies. And she says, "That's a real plus. The tree still looks good while not interfering with offflow from the roof. Good job. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborists at the Care of Trees to take a look at your trees. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, a Davey company. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hi, my name is Peggy, and I publish the greenest magazine in Chicago. Natural Awakenings is packed with fresh information to help you lead a more healthful and sustainable life. Whether you practice yoga or work out, shop fair trade, are mindful of the food you eat and grow, or want a greener and more balanced life, Natural Awakenings is your go-to source for making informed decisions. In print or online, each month you'll find the latest news about what's healthy for our bodies, our families, and the earth, as well as a complete calendar of local events. And did I tell you that the magazine is free and available at locations across northern Chicagoland? Or find us online at nachicagonorth.com. If you're a green or wellness business in search of like-minded consumers, our readers are your potential customers. Call us today at 847-858-3697 to learn more. 847-858-3697. Natural Awakenings Magazine. Feel good, live simply, laugh more.
Better gardening begins when you have the gardener's edge. Since 1885, A.M. Leonard has delivered high-quality tools for gardeners, growers, and landscapers. A.M. Leonard's Gardener's Edge has a huge selection of gardening tools, and right now, listeners to my show can save 30% on their popular soil knife, which has 58 out of 61 five-star reviews. Linda writes, "A must-have tool for every garden. I use it constantly, digging weeds, planting, sowing seeds, and cutting string for tying up plants. Garden Girl says, I have tough clay soil, and having gone through multiple trowels each season for several years, I decided it was time to look for something sturdy. This is it. I no longer even take my trowel to the garden. And right now, save 30% on the incredible soil knife from Gardener's Edge. Call 888-556-5676 during weekday business hours. 888-556-5676. And don't forget to mention me, Mike Novak, or go to GardenersEdge.com/Chicago. That's GardenersEdge.com/Chicago.
Call you up in the middle of the night, like a firefly without a light.
This is the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. And yes, we are a runaway train. I have on the line with me the garden professors. You can go to gardenprofessors.com and find out more from their blog. That is the URL, right? Gardenprofessors.com, Jeff?
That's correct, yep. And, you know, if you want to go onto Facebook, you can find us on Facebook.
Yep.
Just go onto Facebook and type in The Garden Professors, and you'll find us.
Leaving a wake of controversy as they go. And
and we love every minute of it.
I know you do. You eat that stuff up, don't you?
We do.
And I would be remiss if I didn't say that my friend Annie Haven with Authentic Haven Brand Soil Nutrients has been posting here. She does this thing called Moopoo Tea. I suspect you guys are familiar with her. I just say she writes here and go to my Facebook page, The Mike Novak Show. She's got information and she, talks about biosolids. She said biosolids take a huge amount of chemicals to treat. Another article, is from Beyond Pesticides, herbicide contaminated manure damages organic crops in Washington State. Yeah, I've heard about that. I've read about that before. You have to be careful about that. And she says that, her manure tea doesn't have that because she doesn't use chemicals in her ranch and farm. So, that's something to take into consideration. I just did a thing on the Care of Trees, there. And, the question I have for you is, why is it that it's called Arborvitae, but for professors, you have a curriculum vitae? That's, I've never understood that, the difference in pronunciation. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Very interesting question.
What if you called it curriculum vitae? I think you'd get drummed out of the university. sorry.
Hal Sparks might be able to comment on that.
Which one, Denny, are we taking next here?
Oh, you're leaving it up to me. Let's take it to Tom, line one.
Okay, let us go to Tom. Line one. Tom, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Well, good morning, Mike. I'm enjoying a nice warm cup of compost tea here. While I'm not to say anything about the manure tea.
Yeah, but just think of all the microorganisms that you're sucking up there, right?
Exactly. Got a question that's related to nothing you folks have been talking about, even though it's been very interesting. You know, when you're checking out at a store like, say, Walgreens or a Kmart or something, at the checkout counter, they have these little plants that they call palms. Okay, they're about, 7-8 inches tall. And I know it's not really a palm, and I happen to have one that I've had for several years.
You're not, Tom, you're not talking about Lucky Bamboo, are you?
That's what it is, Lucky
That's
Bamboo.
What I think it, yeah.
Yeah, Lucky Bamboo, which is really not a bamboo, but continue.
Okay, well, my question is, mine's grown to be about 6 feet tall now, and my one cat, whom you know very well, Halo.
This is Tom. You never call, so I'm glad you're here.
I know, and I was going to email you about this, and I thought I needed a quicker answer because my cat decides that this whatever it really is tasty, and he's starting to eat it.
I believe it's a Dracaena, is it not, Linda?
I don't think it is.
Oh, am I wrong on that? Okay, maybe I thought...
The stuff I've seen is Lucky Bamboo is not a Dracaena.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, that's the problem with common names, and here I am on the other side of the country, so it's really hard to say.
Yeah. All right. But go ahead, Tom. Continue.
Well, yeah, my question was is that, a lot of plants are poisonous to not only cats but dogs and everything else. And I wanted to find out what the technical name was for it so I could look it up and see if it's a poisonous plant so I can either put it someplace else so he doesn't eat it or let him eat it and enjoy it.
I think it's and I'm basing this on mostly work with trees, not so much with house plants, but fortunately I've got Wikipedia here, and that says it's Dracaena sandriana.
Yeah, I'm looking at the very same thing, the Dracaena sandriana, and
that's one I'm familiar with that's sold at the checkout lines. So I'm assuming that's what it is.
And I'm glad you're online. this is how we work. It's you get on Google and you can solve any problem.
Well, Dracaena is supposed to be a problem. I mean, I actually have one in my office, and I don't have cats in my office. But from what I remember, is that it isn't it the one called dumb cane that if you eat it, it causes you to lose your voice?
And it is listed as toxic to pets. But at the same time. you know, I've looked at a lot of different toxins, a lot of different plants, and the only way to know for sure is to, yeah, I guess I would call my vet on that one just to see whether it's some minor nothing type poison or whether it actually is a big deal. The only way to know is to have them go through the books.
I appreciate that. At least I've got a name that I can give the vet that she'll know what I'm talking about.
And just so you know, Dracaena is spelled Dracaena.
I got the Dra. What was the rest of that?
Dracaena.
Okay, cool.
And I'm looking at it's they're saying that it can cause some problems on this site that I've gone to, so you probably do want to check with your vet and see what kind of problem this might cause. Is there any way you can keep Halo away from this thing?
Not at the moment. It's next to a window that he likes to sit at and look outside, looking for Legata to come by.
And you know what you could do? You could plant up a little container of kitty greens. I mean, you can get either use grass seed or you can use oats and just plant a little container of greens, and he'd probably enjoy that more anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea.
Yeah. You know, that's the way you do it. You distract him with something that's even more delicious.
And the part about it, if you eat it, causing it to lose your voice, Mike, you should stay away from it.
I've already lost my... Hey, listen, Tom, you got to understand, Tom is a radio guy, so he's got the pipes. I don't have those pipes. And by the way, the dumb cane is Diffenbachia.
Yep, my husband just corrected me.
Yes.
I'm not a taxonomist. I have no claims to knowing my plants like that.
Tom, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the information, Mike, and you have a great show. Keep it up.
All right. I appreciate that.
Okay, dude.
By the way, I guess I got, you know, it's a shame. I got to let you guys go. I know we've got a couple. Maybe one. Should we squeeze one more in here, Denny?
Sure. Why not?
Let's squeeze one more.
Rick in Cherry Valley.
Okay. Let's go for Rick in Cherry Valley. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Good morning, sir. I have a question and then a comment.
Okay.
I was under the impression that composted biosolids were sold by the city of Milwaukee under the name of Milorganite.
Yep.
That's true.
And the second comment, or the comment, was that I recall my father coming home from the war talking about how they used to, the locals used to collect the night soil on the base for their farm and gardens.
Yeah, you know, and I will say that Milorganite is a proud sponsor of the Mike Novak Show, and I'm happy to have them on board. And I've toured their plant. I've talked to them about their process. One of the things is they fire up that furnace and they heat the product to a point where the pathogens are destroyed. They have addressed heavy metal problems, and I recommend the product.
Yeah, well, like I say, it was just that it has been used for many years. And it's been sold for many years. It's been 20 years already. They've been in the market, place with it. So that was all.
Did you have a question, Richard?
No, that was it. Was my comment was the question was not regarding Milorganite, but then the other question was obviously I'm concerned with chemicals used or drugs.
And I am
a part of our system.
Yeah,
you know?
and that is, and as we said earlier, that is something we need to address, those chemicals and
right,
make
I know
sure.
That.
Yeah. So all right. Well, I appreciate the phone call. Thank you for calling.
Okay.
All right. So I do want to take one more. Can we get Otto? All right. I know that Denny's talking to him because Otto had.
Yeah. Yeah. Otto in Englewood.
Okay. Otto in Englewood. You're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
I was telling you that I'm 7 years ago I eloped with this wonderful woman down to Tobago. I'm a retired copper at the time, so now I'm 69, and I planted these beautiful hollyhocks out in the garden, and the aroma from the hollyhocks used to waft into the kitchen while she was making breakfast, and she was so happy, she was so pleased to smell this aroma, you know. And then the Japanese beetles arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've tried sprays. I've tried the microbes. You know, I've tried, and they come back every year. And just, you know, hollyhocks come back every year. And every year they come, the Japanese beetles come back. And now they started destroying the the lawn in the backyard. What can you recommend that I can get rid of these things?
You know, Japanese beetles are a scourge. There's, you know, just as gypsy moths are a scourge, just as emerald ash borer is taking out ash trees all over the country, mostly in the Midwest right now. Jeff or Linda, who wants to address this?
I probably have to deal with Japanese beetles more than Linda does. I grew up in Philadelphia, not too far away from where they're actually introduced back in the teens, and then went down to Georgia where they were also, and now I'm in Minnesota where they're just coming in. So to get rid of Japanese beetles, you have to move. But there are other choices. First of all, never use a Japanese beetle trap unless it's far away. Japanese beetle traps draw in more beetles than they catch.
Thank you for saying that.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Okay, good. Well, a lot of people aren't. A lot of people think, I'll capture the Japanese beetles, and what they're doing is they're attracting Japanese beetles. You know, if you need a Japanese beetle trap, put it in your neighbor's yard, okay?
Yeah, exactly. Now, unfortunately, my next couple recommendations, I've heard recently that there's a new product coming out that's based on Bacillus thuringiensis BT, which will affect the Japanese beetles. Haven't seen it yet. I believe it's supposed to be out in March. If I had a name for it, I'd tell you the name for it. But when that comes out, that'll be my recommendation, because BT is a very safe, organic insecticide, which is going to be effective on the Japanese beetles. Unfortunately, and I say unfortunately because I'm not a fan of this pesticide, there is a pesticide that is more effective and is going to be more rapidly effective. There are systemic pesticides that are based on imidacloprid. I think it's Bayer Advanced Shrub Protection. It will work, and it will work for a few weeks. It's very effective, but I don't like it because I consider it too toxic to the environment, or potentially too toxic to the environment. So I'm no fan of it. But I also, you know, as a professor, I have to admit that it's out there and that it does work and works well.
You know, that's a really good point, Jeff, is that, and I do the same thing on my show. I know that there are these remedies out there, and often I don't like them. I would prefer that you deal with some damage to your plants rather than use some of these systemics and some of the other synthetic chemicals that are being used. But as you say, your job as a professor is to tell people what's there. And, you know, if it hasn't been banned, then you can use it. So
What is the name of this, and is it harmful to pets? I have a boxer pit and a yellow lab that roam the yard.
It's not particularly toxic to pets as long as it's used as recommended. You will need to keep them away from it when you first put it down, of course. I can't remember the exact name of the product. I believe that it's Bayer, Bayer Insect Killer, Bayer Shrub and Tree, or Bayer Borer Control. I'm sorry, I can't remember, but look for some of the Bayer products in blue packages, and it'll...
And what was the new thing that you said is coming to market?
The BT.
The BT. That I really can't remember, and I just heard it a couple days ago, and I'm actually pretty excited about that, because BT is a really good product. It's a slow killer. So it won't provide, most people like to see, you know, insects dropping from their trees.
Right.
This won't do that, but it will be very effective.
We all want it right now. Otto, I'm going to thank you for your phone call, and good luck with, and you know what I would suggest to you, Otto, real quick? Plant things that Japanese beetles don't like. That's like, that is, you know, it's there are plants, and then it might not be hollyhocks, but there are some other plants out there. If you go online and you can say Japanese beetle resistant, you will get an idea of some of the plants that they might not favor.
Okay, and thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right, Otto, that was a great call. Thanks. We'll talk later, okay? Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you very much.
And garden professors, you've been on longer than I thought, and I want you back. Is it okay if you come back on the show at some point?
Anytime.
Oh, you bet.
I'd love to have it. That's Dr. Linda Chalker-Scott, Jeff Gilman. Go to my webpage, mikenovak.net. This week you'll get all the information about them, their books, the Garden Professors, the Facebook Garden Professors, and we will talk again very soon.
All right. Well, thanks for having us on.
Have a great Sunday, you guys.
Yep.
You too.
Bye-bye.
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 As Rick DeMaio chided me last week, meteorological spring is for sissies. All the cool kids are talking about climatological spring. I feel cooler just having said climatological spring. Do you want to be cool? Well, just pick up a copy of the March-April issue of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. All the cool kids are talking about it. One of the reasons is the article about how to build a raised bed. Come on, all the cool kids are doing that. The story tells you how to measure the space, select the site, choose your frame, build the box, prepare the soil, and even protect your raised bed from critters like rabbits, squirrels, and chipmunks. And have you ever heard of a plant called Colvitzia dreamcatcher? Talk about cool. It's a plant from China that has a Polish name. Speaking of Polish names, my column is on the inside back page, but the cool kids never read that far. Aw. Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over town, or get a subscription. Go to ChicagolandGardening.com or call 888-265-3600. 888-265-3600.
Have you noticed that there's something going on in the food industry? It's becoming much less industrial. People all over Chicagoland, the U.S., and the world are rediscovering fresh, natural food. I'm Mike Novak, and I want you to join me at the Good Food Festival and Conference, March 14th through 16th at the UIC Forum in Chicago. There will be urban farm tours, workshops with experts in a range of fields, and exhibitors from across the country sharing the latest in sustainable food systems, public policy, and, of course, great food to enjoy. Please visit goodfoodfestivals.com to learn more about this outstanding event. You can purchase tickets online, get directions, and check out the workshop schedule and exhibitor list. Sustainable local food systems can transform our communities, our environment, and our economy. But it's up to us to get informed and get involved. I'll be speaking at the festival, and I hope to see you there. That's goodfoodfestivals.com.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
Allergies acting up, trouble breathing, headaches, sinus pressure, you're tired, congested. Isn't it time to feel better? Breathe deeply and easily. Get rid of the symptoms that complicate your life. Dr. Bonnie Flaster is an acupuncturist and chiropractor who helps people get rid of allergies without using drugs, shots, or needles. Call Dr. Flaster at River North Wellness Center, 312-642-7545. Or go to rivernorthwellness.com to find out how to get your body feeling better so you can enjoy life again.
We're here. I thought we were going to look at Danson in the other room. Isn't that nice? Wish I could be there. We're trying to get a hold of Kathy McGlynn, but she doesn't seem to be picking up her phone. She's there. She's there. I guess it was the office number, not the cell number, wasn't it, Kathy?
It was.
Sorry.
Okay.
Can't believe you're in your office. We have just a short time here. I apologize for that. But 3rd to 9th is National Invasive Species Awareness Week. Your organization is working on that. But you've got some interesting problems, like a sequestration, right? Mm-hmm. It's just sad because you work with the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership, but you're working with the national organization, I assume.
We do promote their events. I don't work with them specifically, but we do promote the events. Definitely.
Yeah. So what are you guys going to do for National Invasive Species Awareness Week, which starts today and goes to next Saturday?
Well, we're still promoting invasive ornamental awareness, and we'll be at the Chicago Flower and Garden Show through the 17th.
And we talked, you and I, on the phone the other day, and I think you should go to the Flower and Garden Show. Do you know what your booth number is?
427.
All right. Go to 427. And because Kathy and I talked about things that are invasive in Illinois, like burning bush, Japanese barberry, purple loosestrife, Japanese knotweed, porcelain vine, butterfly bush, and calorie pear, or we sometimes call it Bradford pear. And I think, don't you think it'll surprise some people to know that these are invasive plants?
I think it will, because they're very popular garden plants.
Yeah. They really are. I think that folks should go to my website, because I have the link there to the Northeast Illinois Invasive Plant Partnership. I want you to go to the Flower and Garden Show. Go to the booth. What was the number again?
427.
427. And talk to the folks there about these plants. I even have a list of City of Chicago invasive plants. I'm so sorry we're out of time, Kathy, but we're going to talk again real soon. I'll get you back, and we'll do a make good on this, okay?
All right. Thanks, Mike.
All right, Kathy. Have a good Sunday.
You too. Bye.
We're done. I guess we just say go green or
go home.
That was loud.